Okay. Be'ezer Hashem, tonight we're up to the second installment about teaching Chasanim. And what we're going to do is pick up where we left off, continuing on in Taharas Bas Yisrael. We're going to pick up page 42, Din Hefsek Tahara. And I mentioned to you that we're going to skip, and this was an important point in terms of directing Chasanim, is that we're going to skip from the halachos that define nida, and that one should learn with the chasan initially, and skip, I believe, the harchakos and leave that to later. And the reason being is because the harchakos are almost tangential halachos. Not tangential that they're not important, but tangential that they're not part of the structure of how hilchos nida works. And right after the halachos of harchakos, we have on page 42, hefsek tahara. Now, generally, I don't do lumdus with a chasan when I learn with them. And the reason is obvious. It's not, you know, la kol zman ve'es. You know, today in halacha shir, our iyun halacha shir, I said I would love to discuss what's in the kudas ha-machlokas over here, but it's not going to be relevant in terms of the halacha. So we'll just leave that. There's a machlokas Rambam and Ravid, and that's the basic machlokas, and to know that. La kol zman ve'es. Kal v'chomer, when it comes to a chasan in general, what you want him to do is feel comfortable, know the halachos, and introduce kedusha and tahara into their home. If that's the goal, so then the goal isn't necessarily to explain how the halachos work. Every once in a while, though, the lamdus or the svara is very, very helpful in terms of explaining an obtuse halacha. Hefsek tahara, the chasan is going to be introduced shortly to the notion of waiting 5 days on the onset of the period. And the Hefsek Tahara is going to be the critical moment, which introduces, of course, the Shiva Nekiyim. That phenomenon of the Hefsek Tahara introducing the Shiva Nekiyim is critical for the chasan to understand that what it is a change in lamdus, if you will, of her chazaka, her status. A woman, when she's a nida, has a status of being a cheskas tmeya. Even if she stopped bleeding, nevertheless, she still has a chazaka of being a tmeya, a chazaka of being a nida, and she needs to do a hefsek tahara. Of course, one needs to keep in mind that it's important to explain that this hefsek tahara is the function of a halacha of zava. And that is that, really, in the Torah, here, at the second class, I would introduce the din d'oraisa, that Anida is tame only for 7 days and she doesn't have hefsek tahara at all. But Rabbi Zeira, in the end of Maseches Nida, teaches us that we consider every dam of what a woman sees today as being zava, and therefore we say that she needs shiva nekiyim. The hefsek tahara, just a second, we'll get to it. The hefsek tahara is the transformation, the change of her status of being a cheskas roa to a woman who now is in the process of going to tahara, and now she has a chazaka being naki, just she needs 7 clean days. So what we've done is 2 things, as we've learned together, the Rebbe with the chasan. That is, first of all, we've explained the din d'oraisa, the difference between nida and zava. That's one thing that we've done. And the other thing that we've done is we've introduced the cheskes tahara is going to be the turning point where she has the status of cheskes roa, and she now assumes a status of an eina roa. Nevertheless, the din d'oraisa requires that she have shiva nekiyim. One more point before Jacob's question, and that is that this phenomenon of the hefsek tahara, this phenomenon of hefsek tahara is one in which halacha lemaisa, when people ask me question, this lamdus also comes up in terms of, if you will, paskening on shilas. What do I mean by that? This isn't necessarily relevant to what one is going to teach a chasan, but just to bring out the point how critical the hefsek tahara is, in general, this is the sense that I got from my rabbeim, we tend to be more machmer on a hefsek tahara than on a bedika, even a bedika on the first or second days, even though many poskim are machmer, more machmer on a bedika for the first 3 days as opposed to the other days. But most poskim assume that the hefsek tahara is that turning point. So therefore, there might be some colors, which don't get involved with the chassan about the colors, but there might be some colors in which one would be more makel later on in the Shiva Nikim, or even possibly towards the beginning of the Shiva Nikim, but in the Hefsek Tahara, one would be Machmer. What's the reason? It's the above Svara. And that is that the Hefsek Tahara is the transformation. Prior, she has a Chazaka being a Roa. After she has the Hefsek Tahara, so then that Chazaka has been transformed. So that you might even want to say to a chassan that that's the reason we might be more stringent on a hefsek tahara as opposed to a bedika later on in the Shiva Nikim. Yes, Jacob.
As you mentioned before, there's obviously many different spectra of people who might be taking chassan classes, different levels.
Right.
Let's say, and of course, there are those out there who are, you know, more like, but not as inclined to follow every derabban and every chumrah. And they hear about this, because the rice is only 7 days. And they say, why? You
know, okay. I would not teach someone who you think would adopt the notion that today they only have to keep nidah 7 days. I would not teach them that in Doraisa. Because there is absolutely no window within anywhere within the spectrum of the halachic world to negotiate the Benos Yisrael Hechmiru Al Atzman for only 7 days. So therefore, if you would be concerned that it would be someone that would say, wait a second, you know, in general, I'm lenient on Dine Dirabbanan, so therefore we'll be lenient with this, I wouldn't give them that option. I'm not a big fan of holding back information in general. I like to build a conceptual framework and give the chassan and kal all their information. I think that that's something that is not always done. But in this case, leman amitas hatorah, leman mesoras hatorah, leman halacha, I think that I would not discuss that point as you raised. Okay, so in Os Aleph, Rav Kahana writes, "Kol ishe shnitmes al yidei riyas dam o kesem o al yidei hargasha tzricha limnos shivan yimei nikim yomeilu matchilim acharei shetase hefsek tahara bet kip shepoisekes b'tahara tzricha lirchotz et atzma b'ota makom." By the way, Rav Kalman Kahana here is speaking to Ashkenazim. For Svardim, not all Svardim are necessarily makbid for this of tzricha lirchos es atzma. So every once in a while, one would have to look into whether the halacha is the same for Ashkenazim and Sfardim. In fact, when I did teach Sfardim, so then I used the Sefer of Rav Mordechai Elio, Darchei Tahara, which is an excellent, excellent Sefer. But either way, the minig, particularly amongst Ashkenazim, is first to wash. So here you're introducing the halacha of the Shiva Nikim that she's supposed to wear white undergarments. So Rav Kalman Kahana goes with the simple reading of Shulchan Aruch, and the simple reading is that she's supposed to have white undergarments as well as sleep on white linen as well. This is an example of where you need to have a mesorah yourself. Some Rabbanim say that today that doesn't apply. If it's what would be normal is the kala would wear undergarments as well as at night, and therefore the linen don't have to be white during the Shiva Nikim. The linen were only had to be white during the Shiva Nikim when it was less common for women to wear a tight undergarment. However, today it could be that the halacha is different. What I would do is explain at this point that Rav Kalman Kahana's halacha, what he's describing over here, is he's describing it al pi dinei de Gemara. And if a woman doesn't wear an undergarment at night, then in such a case there would be a requirement of the white sheet. However, if she did, so then in such a case there wouldn't be a requirement. Now, Gimel is quite important. In describing the Hafsek Tahara, here he describes the Bedika. Now, al pi halacha, a Bedika to be considered a halachic Bedika has to go in Bechurim u'bestakim. It cannot be what we call in halacha a kinuach, a superficial check. It has to be done Bechurim u'bestakim. And therefore, it needs to be emphasized that the Bedika has to go inside. And so that would be something I would emphasize right away, that the Bedika of Hafsek Tahara has to go inside. However, I would use this also as a time to introduce the Chassan to real sensitivity. And that is to introduce him to the fact that later on, as you're married longer, and in a couple of years for your wife, it will probably be less uncomfortable for her to do a Bedika. However, in the initial stages, especially for a Kala, where everything in that area is still tight, and remember, you're talking to a chassan prior to the wedding, so it's going to be uncomfortable. A bedika is going to be uncomfortable for her to do. So here's your opportunity to introduce two things. Number one is the physical reality. Physical reality is that this is going to be uncomfortable for your kala, and if she complains to you that it's uncomfortable, she's not crazy. Even though you learned in chassan classes that the bedika has to be done bechurim u'bestakim, it's going to be uncomfortable. And the other thing that you've done is you've created a general sensitivity where you have shown the chassan that he needs to be sensitive for the different changes that's taking place in the kala's life, particularly the things that are uncomfortable for her in the initial stages of marriage, which will include, of course, the penetration of Bia Rishona, as well as other discomforts that are going to take place. So this is an opportunity to put those things in. Rav Kana continues, Habadiko shel Hafsek Tahara teaseh kach eid, klomar chatichas bad rach, that she should take a bedika cloth, otzemer gefen lavan vinaki, or a woolen bedika, v'tachnisena be'etzba, I think initially when I started, I had a Yetzirah sort of to skip this because it's a little bit graphic. And at the end of the day, the Chassan is not doing the Bedika, but the Chassan should know what a Bedika constitutes, and therefore it's important. Now, don't take anything for granted. Like here in Israel, you take it for granted. You go in a supermarket, so then you get Bedika cloths like you get toilet paper over here. Here in Israel. In the United States, it's not that way. Many women get their bedika cloths when they go to the mikveh. It's something to spend a couple of minutes discussing what a bedika cloth is. I also decided to bring an imitation bedika cloth. I didn't take a bedika cloth today. Chaval, somebody brought me a shayla today that I actually want. I should have showed it to you. But this is actually a piece of toilet paper. It's about the exact same size as most bedika cloths come today, right? So basically the same size. And I would describe to him what a bedika cloth looks like. Maybe you can pull out a piece of toilet paper if you don't have your own bedika cloth. Describe to him what it looks like. There's an idea in psychology, and that is awareness creates comfort. When a person's aware about something, they feel more comfortable with the topic. The more they feel that they're in the dark, informationally about a topic, the more the topic makes them feel uncomfortable. So therefore, hands-on show and tell and things like that could be extremely, extremely helpful. And to describe what a bedika cloth is, and here's a very, very important point, and that is that the bedika cloth needs to be clean. The bedika cloth needs to be clean, and therefore he and his wife should not use just a regular white cloth. B'shas hadchak, you want to emphasize that they can take her husband's undershirt to cut off a piece if they don't have anything else or another item. But that's not ideal at all. It's really, really not ideal. And the reason it's not ideal is because it could be there could be confounding variables. And that is the bedika cloths that you get in a mikveh. Those bedika cloths were particularly made to be entirely clean. They were checked and so on and so forth. Nevertheless, the kala, the wife, should check before she uses the bedika cloth, because often the bedika cloth is sitting in the bathroom and there are many things that are going on in the bathroom. There's toothpaste, there's mouthwash, etc., etc. And so there could be other confounding variables that are sitting on top of the bedika cloth. Hence, describe the bedika cloth and describe that it needs to be clean. Im yirtzeh Hashem, if there are times that you do see a shayla, what you will notice is that at times you'll be able to call out that it's a confounding variable and it's not dam that's on the cloth. One of the reasons I brought water today is, aside from the fact that I'm thirsty, is I wanted to show you this. Okay? I put a drop of water on the desk. Hope I won't get fired for this. And I put the cloth on top of the water. Okay? So now, do you notice that there is an area over here, it's almost a perfect circle, which is the moist area. See that? Do you see it? You actually see it? Great. So there's a moist area over here. Now, a woman comes in with a shayla, it's not as even in a perfect circle, but basically you could see the outlines of the moist area in that shayla. And it's a simple phenomenon. The moist area is that, in general, the vaginal area has moisture. Rav Weitzman explained to us why it has moisture. It's one of the gifts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us, and that is every single one of our orifices of our body to protect the infection from entering through those orifices all have mucus to catch dirt and other foreign agents. So that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us that bothersome wax in our ears, certainly the bothersome phlegm in our noses, all of those things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did to protect those orifices from having items go into our system that could harm it. So too, the vaginal area also has moisture to kill and repel foreign items that it deems unworthy. And therefore, when a woman does a bedika, so then in such a case as well, the moisture is going reflects that mucus. Now, often you'll get a shayla, and it happened just today. Just today, someone asked me a shayla, and this circle area was entirely clean, white. And all of a sudden, over here, there was some type of color. What does that mean? So, as we've spoken about in the Iyun, in Hilchos Nida, what we spoke about is that one of the most important things when it comes to Ksamim is to be a good detective and to try to get to the bottom of where different stains are coming from. So, in this particular case, Baruch Hashem, we didn't have to do too much sleuthing, because even though the husband told me that when he looked at it first, when his wife showed it to him, it seemed reddish, nevertheless, when I looked at it, it was not reddish, so therefore it was fine. In other words, even if it would have been in the center, it would have been fine. However, in this case, there is another factor that one should keep in mind. There is a high likelihood that there are one of two possibilities that are taking place. Number one is that the bedika cloth was never clean in the first place. And if it looks like that it was embedded inside of the cloth, then there's a good chance that the cloth wasn't clean. It came with three hashkachas from the Eda Haredes and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So that's a kasha. The answer is there's no kasha on the Eda Haredes. There might be other kashas on the Eda Haredes, but there's no kasha on this one. Why? Because what happens is it's amazing that from the moment, in 5 seconds, that a woman will take out the bedika cloth from the protective plastic and do the bedika, within 5 seconds it is not impossible, and it happens relatively often, that a foreign body gets on the bedika cloth. An example: if a woman is wearing a sweater, it could very well be there are times that I've taken out a piece of wool that was embedded into the bedika cloth. Or there was just some stain that was lying around. Or she had nail polish, and the nail polish gets on it. So this is where the excitement starts in Hilchos Nida. One of the most exciting parts is the detective component. Nachzor l'inyanenu, this is something that you want to convey to the chassan right away. And that is that the bedikah cloth should be clean, because that would save from sometimes when a rav does not notice it, and that would save from an unnecessary sack of tame when she's really tar. There was a hand over there before. No? Okay. So the Rav Kana continues. Let's skip all the way down to the bottom of 42. So the woman checks the bedikah cloth. One of the most common questions I get, even from young Talmidei Chachamim, is after the chassan, I tell the chassan or the husband that's okay, he'll say, I also thought it was okay. And he was right. I also thought it was okay. Did I need to ask the question in the first place? Or should I ask if it looks like this again? So first of all, the Gemara Nida on Daf Chaf tells us that a Chacham is allowed to paskin on his wife's shailos. In other words, a person who is proficient, has learned the halachos, has done the appropriate shimush, that individual is allowed to decide whether his wife's shaila is okay or not. I would add, though, that I'm just speaking personally, and halavai, I do everything personally correct. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that I don't. But I do think that it's, in my own life, what was important is, every once in a while, when it was a close call, why trust myself? I'm no ge'ah b'davar. And that is, at the end of the day, to go ask a colleague, another rav, and ask him. If it's obvious to you, and you've done the appropriate shimush, then you could paskin, if it's obvious. If you have a suffix, why trust yourself? Even though we say that the halacha is that a person is allowed to check for the ksamim of his wife, we have a rule, ein adam roe es nigei atzmo. That's every once in a while, when it comes to negoyim, you're not allowed to paskin your own negoyim. So it comes to negoyim of your heart, your yetzara, so sometimes you're also not aware. So therefore, since there's such a concept, one should be careful. So the answer to the husband that comes and asks that question is, you could say, yes, if it's like this, and not any more redder than this, then you don't even have to come and ask the shayla. However, here we get back to chassan classes. What did we say was klal gadol b'hilchos chassanim? Klal gadol, Rebbetzin Shmuel Levitz said, is ask, 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 and never assume both l'kula and l'chumra. So that's the same yisod over here. And that is, if it doesn't come out clean, ask. The chassan will say, in 3 months in, do I need to ask? Then you might say, you don't have to ask anymore. But so far, this is the approach. And that is to ask and ask and ask. Continuing on the second to last line, 42. Bidika zu metame gam mare katom kishava. Chei mare zav. So he points out that we're machmir on the hefsek tara. Even in some stain that is like the tint of wax, as well as gold. By the way, not all posts can agree with this, and this requires a tremendous amount of shimush, whether one is going to be machmir, and what exactly qualify as colors. But Rav Kalman Tana brings out our yisod, that even though he's not machmir in the bedikos for these colors, that's something that would be goldish, I think you would think that in our shimush that we did over here, that gold was not something that one would be machmir on. But it should be, for the record, Rav Kalman Kahana was more machmir in this regard. Okay. The Rav Kalman Kahana adds, and this will be on the chassan's mind, when do you do the bedikah? So here what one should do is, once again, explain the process of the 5 days to the 7 days. And that is to say as follows. At this stage of the game, in teaching the chassan, you shouldn't get involved, v'amevin yavin, with pleita shichva zera. You don't have to explain why we wait 5 days. You could say, later on, we're going to discuss, why we're going to wait 5 days. And in fact, explaining the wait for 5 days is probably the hardest thing to teach a chassan. Because plagta shechva zera is a difficult concept. B, the reason why chazal are so machmir is hard for us to understand. The cheshbon of 5 days is also extremely convoluted, which is a chumra agabe chumra agabe chumra. So hence, if there was a chassan that I felt was quite learned, so eventually I would want to teach him how plagta shechva zera works. But in class number two, no need for it. And that is, we'll explain later on, or just take it as a given. We wait 5 days. On the fifth day, and here's what Rav Kalman Kana brings out, on the fifth day, close to Shkia, we do the Hefsek Tara. That's what he says, seven lines from the top on page 43. Umina Kashu, Shetachnis Akra Bedika Samkla Shkia Sachama, Moch Naki, Oban Naki, excuse me. Here he's talking about, already he's gone to the Moch Dachi. See, this is what happens when you skip lines. He's already gone to the fact, A, the Hefsek Tara should be done closer to Shkia. By the way, there it should be done closer to Shkia because when it comes to the Hefsek Tara, you could be Tahar of the Hefsek Tara up until Shkia. So therefore, you would encourage the couple to do the Hefsek Tara not right before Shkia, because what if it's no good and then Shkia comes, it's too late. But if they do it an hour before Shkia, that would be a recommended time. On the other hand, Poskim say lichatchila, it should not be done too early in the day, lichatchila. And the reason for that is because, how do we know that she didn't bleed afterwards? So, a decent time before Shkia, an hour or two, they should be encouraged. And then he introduces the Moch Dachuk. And then he says, again, seven lines on top, Umine Kashu, Shetachnas Achra Abedika Samach Shkia Sachama, Moch Naki, Obad Naki, Bosamachim Baomek. It should be stuck in deep. Now, Rabosai, a month doesn't come by, does not go by, without a woman asking a shayla about a moch dachuk and saying that the moch dachuk is uncomfortable for her. So it's well known that one of our great rabbeim, Rav Willig Shlita, is not so excited about a moch dachuk. For those who are not familiar, one of the reasons that he's not excited about Moch Dachuk is that the Moch Dachuk in the time of the Gemara was not this. The Moch Dachuk was a rod. It was a rod that would enter all through the vaginal canal and would go up pretty close to the uterus. In our Hilchos Nidashirim, we've discussed the physiology. Here we really haven't gotten involved. We don't have the time to get involved with the physiology. But the bottom line is that it went much further than the Moch Dachuk. So Rabbi Willig says it really is not accomplishing the halachic quality of creating a veracity that there wasn't any dam, because it really doesn't go up to the uterus. Yet, at the same time, all it does is a lot of times the shayla is in a Moch Dachuk. I would say that most shaylas that come up from the Hefsek Tara are not the Hefsek Tara, but are the Moch Dachuk itself. The reason why is because it's sitting there for a longer time than the bedika. Again, the bedika has to be done b'churimu b'stakim, and that needs to be emphasized to the chassan and kala. Nevertheless, there are some who don't argue that moch dachuk is not necessary. However, the minig in the Ramah clearly is to do a moch dachuk. Most do not take Rav Willig Shlita's approach. Nahara upashte, that there are two different customs today. I would encourage that even if you're going to follow the psak to say not to have a moch dachuk, is to teach the concept of a moch dachuk. You might explain that your Rebbe is X and your Rebbe says that's not necessary. That is totally fine. But at the same time, what you don't want is the kala to learn one way and the chassan to learn a different way. Now that brings us to a very, very, very important point. And that point is that you have to do your part no matter what you have a strong mesorah. I'm not talking about chas v'chalil, someone who doesn't have a legitimate mesorah. But I'm talking about someone who has a legitimate mesorah to make sure that the way you're teaching is broad enough that different traditions will not come across to the kala and the chassan as a clash. So you have a responsibility to teach broad. And that means that if there are different shitas, like moch dochuk, I think it would be irresponsible for a Talmud of our great Rebbe Rav Willig Shlita to teach the Hefsek Tara without moch dochuk. Why? First of all, I think it's irresponsible from the Amita Shel Torah of the Halacha. You could say that in Shulchan Aruch it says to put a moch dochuk, but at the end of the day, Rav Willig holds that a moch dochuk shouldn't be done for these reasons. Matol Manoi. The other, of course, is she might learn that there's a need for a moch dochuk. And you could apply this to 101 different issues that come up in Hilchos Nida. And therefore, it's important to teach broad. One application of teaching broad is to also be in touch with the Kala's teacher. And it's important to discuss. There are certain well-known hot-button issues where there are different traditions. If you want, I'll just throw them out to you right now, just a few. Ona Beinonis. Is Ona Beinonis 30 days or 31 days? Arzarua. Is there a prisha for the Arzarua? Again, for those who are familiar with Matol Menayim, those who aren't, we're going to get to it in our classes as well. Is there a prisha 12 hours prior to the Ona or not? Ona Beinonis, is that 24 hours or not? All of these things, Nahara Naro Pashte. There are so many traditions as far as these issues. But you could summarize if you want. We could sit down and make a list of the 10 basic controversies, 10, 12 different minhagim that we have that are well-known issues. And you could sit and discuss. Obviously, that should also be done with Tznius. It's a little bit, you know, to discuss in Yane Tahara. With someone else, a woman who's also a Kala teacher, that also has to be done with sneers. It's not something you sit and you schmooze about over coffee. But at the end of the day, the phone is a tremendous gift. You know, you discuss on the phone, and you see how she's teaching it, and you could discuss it together. Some people, you know, are kanoim about this. They're kanoim that the chas and kal teacher have to be talmidim of the exact same Rosh Yeshiva, the exact same Pesach, and so on and so forth. I think the better approach is be broad. And that is encourage both the chasen teacher to be broad, the kal teacher to be broad, to touch on the basic issues. You know, the paradigm, the one who I think is fantastic, in general, obviously there are. I mentioned Rav Willig's couple of exceptions that he has. But in general, I would think the sefer that really captures almost all the positions is Rabbi Forst's book. Rabbi Forst is fantastic. If you know anything that he mentions that there are different customs, those are things that you should touch on. Rav Kalman Kana, even though I love the sefer, is a little bit more narrow. Because the reason why it's more narrow is because the book is more narrow. Rabbi Forst ends up talking about a lot more. No pun intended. Yeah, Av, is there a question there?
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, what would be the best way for a chassan and discuss their respective
A husband and wife, a chassan and kala teacher team. Is that what you're talking about?
Not a chassan and kala.
Should a chassan and kala be encouraged to review their notes? I think the answer is yes. It's okay. The gidrei tznius are something that require a lot of hadracha today. We live as all anybody who's honest. I'm going to use, for lack of a better term, a charedi term. But if you're honest, it's true. We live in a dor parutz, and in a dor parutz that requires us to be cognizant and aware that we need to have very clear lines of what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. But at the end of the day, I think that's sometimes helpful for them to discuss the basics beforehand. Okay, so moch dochuk is in the vaginal area until tzeis hakochavim. I would emphasize over here that since moch dochuk is a minhag kosher is described by the Ramah, a minhag is described in the Ramah, minhag kosher of Kalman Kana says, at the end of the day, I would emphasize that does not have to be kept in all tzeis hakochavim, in the most stringent area. What I mean by that is that one could rely on the most lenient opinion of Tzeisat Rechavim, even if one would generally be machmir for Rabbeinu Tam, one could take the shortest period of time. And again, if it's uncomfortable for the kala, uncomfortable for the woman, I would dispense of the moch dachuk in terms of very practical terms in halacha, and therefore the chassan should encourage that if it's going to be quite uncomfortable for the kala, that in such a case a shayla be asked. Don't encourage him to get rid of it on his own. Encourage him and her to ask shaylas. Okay. In Dalit, he just does a very nice job of spelling out the obvious on page 43. And then what he does is he says, it doesn't make a difference whether she saw for one day or she saw for four full days. At the end of the day, she does a hefsek tahara on the fifth day. And then he raises the issue of a bedika that was done after Ma'ariv, but before Shkia. We're now in the summer months. People are mekabel Shabbos early. And you might just touch on that lechatchila to try to do it after Ma'ariv. I would go quickly over these halachos. Excuse me. To lechatchila, thank you, do it before Ma'ariv. And to ask a shayla if the bedika took place after Ma'ariv. Hey is straightforward. Vav on page 44 is extremely, extremely important. And that is, now you would describe what happens if, unfortunately, the Shivanikim don't work and she sees blood on the second or third day. So then in such a case, she needs to do a Hefsek Tahara on that day. She would need to do a Hefsek Tahara on that day. In Os Ches, he points out that a woman who has a Re'iyah and does the Bedika on that day, this is a complicated sugya of Mayon Pasuach, we're on the top of page 45, he says that if she has a Re'iyah on that day and she does have Siktar on that day, then there are opinions who hold that the Moch Dachuk is Ma'akev, that you must have a Moch Dachuk. This is a big discussion in the Poskim. Again, there are some who are less into the Moch Dachuk. That's one of the reasons I have it in parentheses over here. But at the same time, you might want to emphasize this, what he says in Sif Ches, that a Moch Dachuk, according to some, in such an instance, is Ma'akev. In Sif Tes, he describes that when it comes to a Hefsek Tahara on Shabbos or in Yom Tov, then she would wash with cold water, according to the custom that we described, that she's supposed to wash beforehand, Ba'osa Makom, and that is what is done as opposed to hot water. On the bottom of page 45, he points out something that's not well known, which I think many chassam teachers do not teach, but is actually a halacha that once upon a time was really a shayla chamura. Nowadays, it's only a shayla chamura, I would say, in about 10% of the instances, and that is, according to halacha, one is not allowed, a woman is not allowed to wear a moch dachuk outside on Shabbos, because that is considered a masui. It's not considered a beged. A moch dachuk would not be considered a beged. What percent of Klal Yisrael would you say nowadays on Shabbos is within an Eruv? Here in Eretz Yisrael, I would say it's 95%, if not more. In America, well, it depends on what you say about many Eruvim. I have a fantastic story, if I may, that I was actually just discussing with my Talmidim in Daily Gemara Shir, the Machlokis Rishonim, of what qualifies as a Sefer Torah Psula. Most Rishonim hold that one os is not there, it's possible. However, the Rambam is quite a makel. The Rambam holds that you need a lot of letters missing to be considered a Sefer Torah possible. So they tell a story that the Briska Rav was on vacation with the Stalin Rebbe, and the Stalin Rebbe had Aliyah, it was Shabbos morning, and he thought he noticed quite a psul in the Sefer Torah. So he signaled over to the Briska Rav and pointed the Briska Rav to look in to the Sefer Torah to paskin on the Shaila. The Briska Rav went like this to Baal Korah to go on. So after davening, the Stalin Rebbe said to him that he said the Rav from Brisk, I had heard that you're quite a machmer, which the Briska Rav was choshish for many days. He says, I was very taken aback. And he said, according to most Rishonim, the os was pasla. I was very surprised that you were makel. The Risker Rav said, you're right. According to most Rishonim, the osu is possible. But according to the Rambam, you could have a few osios, psulos, and the Sefer Torah be kosher. He said, but what would have happened when the Sefer Torah is possible? So then what would happen would be is that they would go outside and bring another Sefer Torah. He said, but the Erev was possible the Chol HaDeos, the Risker Rav said. So over here, if the Erev is kosher, the classic harifas from the Brisker Rav, if the Erev is kosher, then there's no problem mochtafuk. But that's something that they didn't teach me. And that's why it's nice also, this is what we were talking about before, about using a sefer. Who remembers to teach this about a mochtafuk of walking outside of an Erev? And I wouldn't remember it. You know, if I'd be writing up my notes from Hilchos Nida, I wouldn't remember to say it. I think the only reason I remembered when we learned Hilchos Nida in Be'iyun that I remember to say it is because Rav Kalman Kana made that point. I might not have even thought of such a point without it. So having a good sefer to lean on and something that covers all the bases is very helpful. Then we go on to Shiva Nikim. Yes, there's a question? We go on to the Shiva Nikim. Of course, the Shiva Nikim is the seven clean days. What I would encourage, leaving aside Jacob's Ha'ara, if one is confident that to describe the Din D'Oraisa would be helpful for the Chasan, so then I would emphasize that when it comes to Zava, we would open up the Psukim in Vayikra and say, the Torah describes with Safra La that she counts seven clean days. I would even raise, here I would raise a fascinating question just to sort of sharpen the idea of Sfira that the Piskei Tshuva raises from the Levush, a question of whether the woman should actually count. Tonight we counted, that was the 38th day of the Omer. Shalah, thank you, not Levush, thank you. The Shalah raises the possibility that she should count the actual day of her Shiva Nikim, saying today is the first day, just like we said tonight. Tonight was the 38th. So too, she would also count. Today is the first day of their Shiva Nikim, the second day. The Minig Yisrael is not that way, even though the Shalah has a good argument that maybe V'safra La, the mitzvah is for her. So we were ma'arich in the Shiurim, why it could very well be that Sfiras Shiva Nikim is different than when it comes to the mitzvah of Sfira for Sfira Sa'omer. But at the end of the day, one would mention that. Why would one mention that, even if we're not telling them La Halacha to follow that? The reason is because we want to emphasize that this is a new halachic category called Shiva Nikim. And the writing of Rav Kalman Kahana is the correct way to present it. Even though I know that there's some of my colleagues and friends that don't present it this way. On page 46, he says, "Kol shivas hayom anikim tzricha livdok asatzma pamayim biyom." She should check twice a day. Achas baboker v'achas b'sof hayom. This language comes straight from the Shulchan Aruch itself, that a bedikah on the Shiva Nikim should be done twice a day. Now, you might want to say that there are rabbeim today who are of the opinion that in the Gemara you only find the bedikah of Shiva Nikim once a day. So there is a minig that goes back to Kadmonim to check twice a day. Some of our rabbeim said that nowadays, since the conditions of that a woman is under, the time constraints, etc., then the checking twice a day could be extremely difficult, could create other problems. Here would be the opportunity, v'amei v'nyam, and I can't be ma'arich too much right now, where scratches could come in if a woman is harried. So then in such a case, and some of our rabbeim pointed out that we go back to the din unto gemara. But this is a classic moment where even if that was your masorah, it's not my masorah, of once a day. To go back to once a day, thank you. Even though that is not my masorah, masorah is to say that l'chatchila you do bedika twice a day, like in the Shulchan Aruch. But even if one did have that, I think it's important to teach like the way it says in the Shulchan Aruch. A, for two reasons. Number one is, again, la'amitas halacha. Anytime you're going to teach the halacha different than the Shulchan Aruch, you should spell out what the Shulchan Aruch says, and yet the custom is different because Rav so-and-so says that this is what should be done. And B, of course, is coming back to the other point. The odds are that the Kala teacher is going to teach the way it's written in Shulchan Aruch. And that's what he says in Beis, it dovetails very nicely once you make that point. So then, if she misses once in that day, so then in such a case she shouldn't have to check. At this point, I would emphasize that the importance that the woman, that he should convey, that the woman shouldn't feel the pressure to check quickly. Because if she rushes, then there is, unfortunately, a higher likelihood for her to scratch herself. And if she scratches herself, so then, of course, then we're going to get into Shailas of Makkah. If I don't remember to say this, I'll say it now in one sentence. We should elaborate more. Of course, Makkahs today, there is a fantastic phenomenon of Bodeket, and women who are Bodkot. I mentioned to the Talmidim in the Shir, I was blown away when a woman had a Bodeket checker, and the Bodeket called and described the scratch that she had, because al pi halacha we needed to verify whether there was, it could be tola b'makkah, and the Bodeket's every word, she was like a Rashi meduyak. Every single word that she said in describing the makkah was another sif in Shulchan Aruch. In other words, every single, she had learned exactly, she didn't sit and break her head on a Shachan Ataz. That's not the role of a woman, to break their head on a Shachan Ataz. But rather, what did she do? She learned appropriately. Whoever trained her did an excellent, excellent job. And she described exactly what the potential makkah was, and hit on all the points that are necessary in, what is it, Kuf Pei Zayin, right? Kuf Pei Zayin? In Kuf Pei Zayin or Kuf Pei Ches, one of the two. And Kuf Pei Zayin. So that, and there is where the role of a bodeket is very, very important. Coming back, L'nyanenu, we don't want to get into that situation in the first place. And that we don't want the woman to have a scratch. And here, we're going to say that try to do everything you can to remember the bedikas. And that means that a woman should set an alarm for herself to remind herself to do the bedikas. And say that the first and seventh day are ma'akev in the bedikas. You must have a bedika on the first, and you must have a bedika on the seventh. If one does not, according to many poskim, so then in such a case, she has to check again. The other thing that one want to emphasize, which is one of the complicated things, yeah, what's that?
What does it mean by check again?
What's that? That means she's going to have to start her Shiva Nikiyam again. In regards to the mitzvah of Sfira, here Rav Kalman Kahana points out something that could be very confusing to couples. So my girsa would be a little bit different than Rav Kalman Kahana's on page 46. And that is, he points out that if a woman loses track of her Shiva Nikiyam, she has to start again. The halach is v'safra la, she needs to know she's on the first day, second day, third day, or the fourth day. So if women find it very confusing. What if she knows she has a shaila on the third day? So a woman should not say, I don't know where I'm up to. She should say that she knows where she's up to. She's up to the third day. And now she has a shaila. She has a cheskas, ain't a roah. She has a cheskas of already a hefsik tahara of tahara. In other words, it was good, the hefsik tahara. Now she just needs Shiva Nikiyam. She should never be motzi herself from her chazaka. So there are many instances where a woman could lose track of her Shiva Nikiyam, and according to some, and in many instances, then she's got to start over again, because she's supposed to count and say that I know today's one, I know today's two, I know today's three. So we don't follow the Shita Shala, who says that she's got to say out of her peh, but at the end of the day, according to many poskim, she's supposed to have that clarity. Now, Rav Kalman Kahana says it in a little bit of a harsher way, and I would say my girsa would be the way I said it. Yes?
If she knew it was like at least two, let's say.
At least, right.
At least two, because she continued from there.
Right, so, but at the end of the day, she might lose three. We don't want her to lose
right,
three.
I'm saying, let's say, if she wasn't sure, instead of making her start again, can she at least continue from two?
I don't think so. You mean you're saying she knows that she had...
She's
no, because it needs to be Ritzufim.
She's not sure she had two.
It needs to be Ritzufim. The Shiva Nikiyam have to be Ritzufim. So if she loses three, then she can't go from one to two to four.
No, in other words, day one... count the next day three. The next
no,
day
but that, no, but that's not called three. You can't have Sunday one, Monday two, Tuesday not, and Wednesday three. Shiva Nikiyam need to be Ritzufim. So the moment in which she loses three... she loses one and two as well. So we don't want her to lose anything. She should always have straight, going straight. All right, we reached the bottom of page 46. We've got a few more halachos of the Shivan Akim. Should we push through and just get to the end of the Shivan Akim? Is that okay? Or we're rushing.
Is that what we would aim to do with the chasm? To end the Perek Dalet?
Correct. Correct. I would try to end the Perek Dalet, yeah. Okay, is that a way of saying that we should try to do it?
It's my opinion.
Okay, so let's go. So on the top of page 47, so we just have the next halacha that I used to answer the previous question. And that is, the Shiv and Akiyim need to be Ritzufim. And that should be something that one should teach the Chasan. And the first day one, is right after the Hefsek Tahara. Okay, Dalad's a little vague. I would even leave Dalad. I would leave Dalad, and I would go on to Hey. In terms of the timing, he raises something that's interesting. What happens if a woman travels? L'chein ha'isha she'eschila l'spar. I'm in the second sentence of Hey. B'makom echad va'avra l'makom acher bo mekademet hashkia o mitacheret mu ha'makom she'ot ha'bo mikodem ein lel zman hashkia makom she'nimseis. So now, what happens if a woman has traveled to a place where there is the shkia is at a different time? In other words, the day is a shorter period of time. So the answer is that the shkia is always defined by where she is. You can't say, well, I had another 3 hours in the previous place. It's always defined where she is. I think that would be quite obvious. Actually, I was once on the plane, and someone recognized me, and he said, I have a shiloh. So there was a shiloh that I had to look at on the plane, and you have to keep track where you are in terms of shkia on vis-a-vis on the plane. Okay. Of course, he concludes that if she passes the international date line, so then that's going to have no significance. What do I mean it's going to have no significance? The day is the day, her counting the day where she is. So if the day happens to be very, very short, because when she arrived, it was already halfway through the day and then shkia, so it was a five-hour day. However, if she misses, there's no such thing as missing a day. And that is at her Shivan Akiyam will be that she needs to count somewhere on earth from a day from its beginning moments to Shkia, and you need seven of those. So you don't skip or lose a day of Shivan Akiyam. Sfiras HaOmer is a fascinating shiloh, what to do about Sfiras HaOmer. We've once discussed this in Musar Shmuz, but we'll leave that for now. So, okay. So, Mirtzeh Hashem, next time what we will discuss is Mitzvah's Tvila. I would not spend a lot of time with a Chasan and Kala here on Hilchos Tvila. What we're going to do is we're going to skip again to Prisha Samach Leveses, and then I like to get into Veses relatively early on. Because Veses is the most confusing thing. So you don't want to take a Chasan into, you know, last thing before his Chasana, doing the Vestas. What you want to do is do Vestas, but at the same time, do it in at earlier rather than later. So Mirtzeh Hashem, next time, we'll just touch on the basics of Tefillah with the Chasan, and then what we'll do is get to the mitzvah of Prisha, Samach Leveses.